Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are going to be talking about a topic that almost everyone wants to hide under the covers, keep within your four walls of your bedroom, never tell anybody anything about it, and Lord, if it ever happens to you, you had better find you've got a whole steel wall around you to be able to protect all your secrets. How hard is that to go on in life to protect secrets? Been there, done that. People have all kinds of secrets through all kinds of generations. It could be drinking, physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, financial concerns. It could be feeling less than. It could be feeling that they have to control. All kinds of stuff we want to keep hidden. And just that which we keep hidden, as we have said on this show many times, is what keeps us from healing. It keeps us from being able to grow through things in life. It also keeps us on a path where we're always in judgment of what others say. We're always in judgment of what we choose to do. And we never kind of fully engage in life and just be vulnerable and exposed and be raw at every single moment to be able to learn the lessons or to be able to say, I can help you. I've been there. And there are a lot of different paths that a lot of different people are hearing these days. This waking up and awareness, people are really saying, you know, I just can't hide behind things anymore. I just can't protect all the time anymore. But what I do want to do is to be aware. I want to fully engage in life, and I want to be present. Today, we're talking about sexual abuse, a number one on the top of the list that people would love to just hide underneath the covers. Today, my guest is Joelle Castex, and her book is The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse. And she is definitely the expert on this, as she's an expert on prevention and exposure of childhood sexual abuse and cover-up. Now, that's really important because people will say, I thought everything was going along fine, and you're talking to me about prevention, what I didn't do again, and shame on me that I didn't figure things out or I didn't protect my child in the first place. And then exposure. Oh, my gosh, you know how those peer groups go. I'll tell you, there's more peer pressure as being an adult than there is as a child these days. So, Joelle, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, don't you think, as we've said in the beginning, a whole lot of things to talk about here, and life is really changing these days, right?
Yeah. You know, it's the conversation in our society has completely changed when it comes to child sexual abuse. And fortunately, you know, you brought up that, you know, people are, you know, they tend to feel defensive and ashamed. And fortunately, we've been able to begin to shift that argument. And because more and more survivors are coming forward and because we're getting more prosecutions, people are opening their eyes and seeing this not as a shameful secret that needs to be hidden as much as they see it as a public safety crisis. And when you take it as a public safety crisis, then you can deal with it intelligently, make sure that criminals are put behind bars, and give your kids solid skills to make sure that they're not targeted.
And also, too, about becoming exposed, the feeling that people, I mean, I'm almost 60, people did not want to be exposed if you were in the 70s and 80s. It was all about what you could be hide behind and just how thick your wall could be, you know. And now people are just starting to come out and say they can't carry those secrets with them anymore. And I think you find a lot of parents who have been holding on to that for so many decades are now starting to break down and say, I can't carry it, and then they're teaching their children. So it takes a few decades to be able to say, you know, we can't hide behind it as a shameful thing. Now we're learning through it, and I think that's where we are now, don't you?
Definitely. And we're seeing that, you know, the pervasiveness of the crime, because nobody talked about it, people who were not sexually abused didn't think it was as pervasive as it is. And I mean, I remember talking to my mother-in-law, and she grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and she said, oh, we never had problems. There was no such thing as sexual abuse when I was growing up. And I said, well, perhaps there was no such thing as sexual abuse in your house where you were growing up. But
right.
I guarantee it affected your friends, it affected your peers, it affected the boys you dated and the girls you hung out with. And, you know, we really owe it to the early pioneers who exposed sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, because they were really the ones who took child sex abuse and turned it into a legal issue. And when you turn it into a legal issue, then it's something that you can wrap your arms around and fight and get justice for.
And also, too, I think, as you had said about your mother, a lot of times people will say, we just live in an idyllic bedroom community, everything is great. And sometimes you say the more perfect it looks on the outside, sometimes the more chaos that there is on the inside, you know. And I've found that several instances where people would say, that will never happen to my child because. So the parent is really running in defense of fear, and then the child is never really cared for or taught any prevention, or even the discussion doesn't even come up in their home.
Exactly.
And that's more dangerous.
Nobody wants to think that 90% of child sexual abuse is perpetrated by someone the child knows and loves. Nobody wants to think about that. And so when they protect their child, they talk to them about stranger danger, and they talk to them about shouting no, but they don't realize that really preventing child sexual abuse means arming your child to give them strong body boundaries against the person that they already know, love, and trust. And that takes a complete change in how we think about our children, their rights over their bodies, and how they are able to deal with their world.
Let's define a few words for some people, because a lot of people say to me, that's not what that is. I don't get it. You know, well, I can give it another name. I mean, the words incest or sexual abuse, those words, people will say, it's not defined like that. You don't know what you're talking about. That's what it is. And they have a totally different concept, especially when it comes to what actually occurred as the experience, then what you have to go, you may go forth in the legal aspect, and then further going on and saying, I'm ready to get past this and heal. People tend to shape-shift the words and the definition just to make themselves comfortable, when in reality, what is it?
Well, we love to minimize. That's what we do as human beings. We love to minimize, to make big problems seem much smaller, to second-guess ourselves, and to make sure that we don't cause too many waves. And when it comes to cases of incest and cases of child-on-child sexual abuse, we love to minimize those the most. Because in incest, I mean, that's a violation of two of the biggest sanctities that we have, our family and our children. And it is just beyond many people. So they like to minimize and say, oh, it wasn't that bad. Or I was fine. It was only the way the family reacted. Or, he didn't understand, or things like that. And the same thing, I dealt with a case a couple months ago where it was, you know, child on child. And the parents who were the parents of the children and the parents who were reporting kept saying, well, maybe it's just boys will be boys. Maybe they really didn't mean it that way. And what you have to do is really get back to the core of the issue. When, you know, boys are forcing other boys to perform sexual acts, that is sexual abuse and bullying. When adults force children to engage in any kind of sexual acts, whether the child does it to the adult or the adult does it to the child, and even if that adult is a well-loved member of the family, a father, an uncle, a mother, a brother, a sister, that is sexual abuse and needs to be reported, and the people need to go to jail.
And also, is there statute of limitations on that? Because sometimes people will say, something occurred in my younger years, and I may have told my parents, and they kind of hid it, and then I'm now in my 20s or 30s, and now maybe it's still coming up for me. Can I still do something about it? What is the statute of limitations on these types?
Well, the statute of limitations, for your listeners who don't know, is the time period that a victim has to come forward and file criminal charges or a civil lawsuit. And those, they're two different statutes for a crime. There's a civil statute and a criminal statute, and they vary from state to state. And this is where our system falls down, because we have horrible, short, and poor statutes of limitations for victims of childhood sex crimes, because it takes victims decades to come forward. I didn't come forward and really understand the extent of the damage that was done to me until I was 30. But my my statute of limitations ran out when I was 19. So there was no way at the time that I could prosecute the man who hurt me. Now, we in California, we had a one-year window that allowed me to come forward, and I filed a civil lawsuit. But that was just a fluke that I was able to do that. In most states, victims of childhood sexual abuse are denied the right to expose their abuser, to make sure their abuser doesn't hurt other kids, and to get some kind of justice. So, I mean, and that's why one of the big things that I do is go from state to state and lobby for longer statutes, because we need to give victims time, and we need to allow them to heal on their own terms, not according to the terms that some lawmaker made up, you know, 50 years ago.
You know, it's interesting. I live here in the New Orleans area, and in the past, I would say 3 years, there has been an accounting, and it was exposed that there were so many sex kits from all of these accusing situations where they were never, ever done anything with. In other words, the kits were there, they were taken, and they were put into this room, and it was locked, and it was just left there. Nothing ever happened. So there was a whole lot of crimes occurring, and there was no follow-through. Nobody ever got to court. No one ever had anything happen. So it was sort of like you could almost, to the perpetrators, it was almost you could do whatever you want. Hey, they're just going to put it in the room in there, and it is no big deal. So there was no repercussions whatsoever. You know, the criminal system is just too overloaded. It's just not into it. It just let it go. And I find that in many different cities where they just aren't able to handle the load.
You know, and that's true. And so, you know, child sex predators, the reason that the crime is so pervasive and the reason that they're able to get away with it is because, first of all, most of the kids simply don't report. And if they do report, they don't report in time. And if they do report and they report in time, then things like that happen. There just isn't the robust judicial system who is taking care of these kids. You know, it really depends on the area. Many states, like I live in Southern California and I live in Orange County, and we have a very robust child abuse services team. So whenever there's an allegation of sexual abuse or child sexual abuse or you know, any of that, so the child goes in and meets with a social worker and a forensic interviewer, and they're very thorough and they're very kind and they're very compassionate, and they just do one interview and they have a tremendous success rate because they work together and they prosecute these crimes and they get the victim and their family help. But in other areas where they don't have the money for things like that, or they don't have the services. We have a horrible problem on our Native American lands because they don't have the services available. Child sexual abuse is rampant. And if a child does come forward, there's no repercussion whatsoever. So it's really important that we not only listen to our kids, but we fund the criminal justice element that puts these people behind bars.
And also, too, you want to have the whole step process all the way through. In other words, when you have children coming forth and then they have the criminal aspect, you want to be able to have counseling and some other support services already in place, because probably the worst thing to do would be to not have all the way around support, because you're kind of left hanging and feeling very vulnerable, and then what happens, right?
Oh, yeah, and the services have to extend to the whole family because, especially in cases of incest, if you have an offending parent or offending family member, you have to make sure that all the non-offending family members get psychological or therapeutic care right away because they've all been suckered in by this this abuser. And so, because, incest is so horrible, and those, the victims of those crimes are put through the ringer, because not only are they abused, but usually their whole family turns their back on the victim. And so the more that we can get help for the non-offending family, let them know that, they are also victims of a crime in this situation. In other cases of child sexual abuse, parents, they will beat themselves up for years, and the other children may still be at risk. So instead, if we get these parents into care, we teach them that they are not bad people because their children were targeted, and then we teach them how to empower their kids and teach them how to make sure it doesn't happen again and give them all the counseling they need. That's how we can break this cycle.
Right. And also, too, I've had a case that I had heard of a few decades ago where the children had been abused by an elderly uncle. And never brought it up to the parents until they were in their 30s. And when they did, the parents' response was, "Oh, really?" And then just went on with their normal day. And that's such an invalidation of how the parents may have put the child in that position in the first place. So it's really you really need to have parents on board that are opening up their eyes, and you explain that in your book. You really need to be aware. What are the signs? What's going on here? Am I paying attention to my child? What are they telling me? What are they not telling me? And what's out of the ordinary? These are all very clear signals that something may be up. And that's really where the beginning starts, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, the number, if you want an archetype of the how horrible incest can be, you can always look at Jerry Sandusky. His wife, to this day, is not only defending him, but saying that the victims are lying, and they're not.
Right.
And we see that in incest all the time, and we see that everyone's forced to take a side. And so, the more that awareness solves 90% of the problems, because if you understand the signs of predatory grooming, and that is how an adult creates a compliant victim in a child, but if you understand those signs and you're aware and you have you're as aware of your child's safety inside your home with the people they love as you are outside when they're on the playground, you have mitigated 90% of the potential danger. So it's so easy and so simple. I mean, I'm not saying, you don't have to go in and give everyone in your family a 90-page questionnaire and spy on people. You have to monitor behavior. You have to ask questions. You have to teach your child that it's okay. It is way okay for you to not be touched, and you are never to touch never to touch other people. In their genitalia, and give the genitalia the proper names, and no one else is to touch yours. And if it does happen, it's not your fault, and you come and you talk to mom immediately. And you start those conversations. So there's no black and there's no gray area. So your kid can't be, conned by a sex predator who says, "Oh, no, it's okay, because we're in your bedroom, so it's safe in here." If you empower your kid to say, "No, my mom says it's never okay, and I'm telling her, and I'm telling her right now," then you can expose the most pernicious predators out there, and those are the ones that you already know.
And also, too, the idea is that when you report about, some people report to their church or to their school group or youth group, and sometimes you have to consider that when you're reporting to a system or an association or a group, sometimes they don't want to speak up because that's their protection mechanism to be able to put a cap on that.
Institutions will always protect themselves, and that's just the way it is. Whether it's a church,
right,
whether it's the Boy Scouts, whether it's a community group, they will always rally and protect themselves. It's the same way in your job. If you go over your boss's head and report wrongdoing, it usually is a career-limiting move. It's the same thing in an institution. They will circle the wagons, and they will protect someone who's being accused rather than investigate. So what I always encourage people to do is if you see child sex abuse, you pick up the phone, you dial 911. You treat it like you're seeing a guy walking around your neighborhood with a gun, pointing it at people. It's a crime. If a child comes to you and reports child sex abuse and they are in serious distress, if the child has obviously just happened, you dial 911. If you suspect child sexual abuse, go to your organization and voice your fears, and then you pick up the phone or you go on the internet and you go to the National Child Sex Abuse Hotline, and you call them and you tell them what you suspect. And what they have are crisis counselors who will walk you through the process, who will ask you more questions, who will see what you know, and then if they think, yes, you know, this is something you really need to report, they'll give you the proper number in your community to report to. So there's, you know, never just think that someone else is going to handle it for you. Always take the bull by the horns and handle it yourself. And if you report, you know, reporting someone doesn't mean you're pointing fingers at your neighbors and calling them abusers. It doesn't mean you're sending someone to jail. Because I'm an expert on this stuff, but I'm not an expert on investigation. The police are the expert on investigation. So I hand it to them. It's not my job to do the investigation to make sure that so-and-so is not a sex abuser. It's my job to report. And
you know,
it's everyone's job to report.
And also, too, when they do go through the legal system, they also do have to – predators are alerted in your neighborhood. I know in several different locations I've lived in the country, I think out of maybe 20 different locations, I can only recall two locations where I would get postcards in the mail with a full description, address, name, photo, and everything of sexual predators in the area within a mild radius. And in the other areas, I never, ever did get that. So have you seen that? I've seen that all the time.
Well, we have Megan's Law here in California. Many other states have Megan's Law websites, and they can be a very useful tool. But a lot of the child sex predators who have been convicted are not on it because either their conviction was knocked down to a misdemeanor, or there was a glitch in the system, or they have absconded. I mean, one of the worst predators that we have around here is not on the list, and we can't figure out why. But that's great if there's someone you don't know, and you're like, well, I'm going to look up this guy, and you can find him right there. The problem is a predator that you already know that's never been convicted. It's the high school teacher who's the really cool teacher who takes the kids cool places. It's the Boy Scout leader who always has the kids flocking around him or her. And remember, women abuse too, and you always need to keep your eyes open. It could be anybody. And so it's understanding the patterns that abusers use. It's arming yourself with information like Megan's Law, but realizing that most predators are never going to be arrested. And a lot of people who blur sexual boundaries with children will never be convicted. So, it's, you know, the parents are a child's best defense. And parents have the tools to give their kids to make them far less likely to be abused.
So I think in some situations the postcards were extremely helpful because many times people will say, I left my kids with the next door neighbor, or I really needed a babysitter, and in my complex there's these people that happen to be home all the time, and I just asked them to get my kids from the bus stop or whatever. So it really seemed to be an alert system for those that you would have never, ever thought about.
Definitely, yes. But also, you know, you need to think of these things beforehand, too. You don't just leave your kids with a neighbor. You always do. I mean, you may not be able to do a complete criminal and civil background check, but you always make sure that granted, we all have to leave our children with babysitters, but, you know, check Megan's Law, make sure they're not on it. Ask around, make sure there's no issues. You can, and the internet is a wonderful tool to find out if people have been involved in problems. I mean, when people decide to send their children to school, I often get phone calls. Oh, how do I know that it hasn't happened at my child's school? Like, well, you know, there's a great tool called Google, and on Google and put in the name of your child's school and type in civil sex abuse lawsuit or criminal sex abuse arrest, and you'll be amazed at what you find. And so, you know, empower yourself and make sure that you have an appropriate babysitter, a babysitter who is truly there because they care about kids and not someone who is, you know, if someone makes the hair on the back of your neck stand on end, maybe that person shouldn't be your babysitter.
Absolutely. You know, in Arizona, on the bottom of the news, every single evening, well, this is two decades ago. I'm not sure if they still do it, but they would always list on a rolling a slide across the bottom of the news, like a ticker tape kind of thing, they would always have the names of the people that did not pay child support, and they would have the amount of money that they owed. And this would go on, you know, every single day. Yet when there's something just more as pervasive as hurting people, it's just always kept undercover so much you rarely even hear about it in some, you know, different circles. And I think a lot of parents, too, once this does happen to your family, parents say, we have to move. We have to get out of here. I got fired from my job. Or they don't want to, the company doesn't want to be affiliated with me anymore. And I think these are definitely topics to talk about because this type of situation does occur.
Oh, definitely. We all love to escape. You know, we all love to get away from, you know, if there's a problem, it's much easier to escape the problem than it is to actually deal with it. And, you know, it's really realigning our way of thinking and making sure that, you know, if something bad happens in your family, escaping the problem doesn't help anyone. But getting a child help and calling the police does. And not allowing our predators to escape judgment either.
And also, too, then you're also giving up the control. The other situation of the other person really has you under their thumb because you've now felt like you're defeated and you've lost your control over your life. When really you could turn that situation and say to your boss or maybe, you know, your neighbors or whatever it is, absolutely, and gosh, I missed the signs and I miss the situation, maybe we could start having a group where we could start alerting other people to this. What signs did I miss? Do you all know what the signs are? Do you all know what this might mean? What is going on? Are you listening to your kids or not? You know, we're so quick to throw the gauntlet down when people have drugs and, you know, kids end up in rehab and the parents say, if I ever knew. Well, here's another situation. If I ever knew, why can't you just share that information? And then you may find that there's other people that will come forward later. So it's sort of like, you know, things happen because they do. And when they do, it's probably best to be able to take a proactive stance with it and say, I'm not going to have it happen anymore. I'm going to do the best I can. And if it does, you know, I'm going to share all this information. I'm going to do as much as I can. In other words, bring it forward. Don't always keep it in, you know, we're going to fix this little situation and we're going to make it nice and perfect and put a nice little dress and coat on it, you know, every time that goes out. Rather than go out and say, yeah, it happened. Did you ever ask your kids about it? Or have your kids ever spoken about it? Or do your kids even know that this could happen, right?
Shame is a very, very powerful tool that we use against ourselves and other people to change the way we act in certain situations. Shame and secrecy are why children don't come forward and report. Shame and secrecy are why parents are scared to address the issue right away. And we have shame and secrecy when it comes to child sexual abuse because we have this weird idea that child sexual abuse has to do with sex. It has nothing to do with sex. It has to do with the abuse of power and the abuse of that power relationship. So the more we take sex out of the equation and the idea of sex and morality and purity, and we deal with it as a crime against a child that has nothing to do with, you know, no one did anything wrong except the child, except the predator. And no one is to blame except the predator. And we need to take responsibility for the fact that it happened, and we need to make sure that it never happens again and that we get the help we need. And you remove shame from the equation. And, I mean, I'm sure you see this in any topic you talk about. Nothing is more damaging to a person than shame. And shame is how, you know, we control people. When you look at, you know, even when it came to early man was shunned for doing shameful things from the tribe. Throughout civilization, shame has been a very powerful tool used in religion and community groups. We need to get rid of shame. And the only person who should feel any sense of shame or who should be publicly shamed is the perpetrator. And we need to tell our children that if something happens to you, like sexual abuse, it is not your fault, and you do not carry that burden. you have done nothing wrong. And we do the same with the parents. You know, hey, you know what? You're a parent. No one hands you a manual when your kid is born. None of us are perfect. And so if you take shame out of the equation, quit beating yourself up and be a catalyst for change, just even within your family, and embrace your child and do everything you can to make sure that your child gets the help he or she needs and you get the help you need, then we can all be better equipped in this world instead of hiding or escaping or not talking about it. I mean, granted, I'm a big advocate and I'm the one always waving the flag and, you know, blowing the horn, but you can be just as strong an advocate for your child without doing all that. And it's just by getting rid of shame and getting the true, authentic help that you need, admitting that you're not perfect, and admitting that you have the power to make real change.
You know, I can remember it was back in the early 90s when they really started, maybe it was the mid-90s when the Internet started to come out, and people would realize maybe that their dirty secrets were going to start to be exposed. And we had lived in Arizona at the time, and they were saying, well, we want the kids to start paying attention because blonde girls were getting abducted in the area. And my daughter was very blonde, very young, you know, thin blonde girls in Arizona is, you know, that's what they are. And my daughter had, she would be walking home from the bus. And she said one time this guy, you know, that had lived over us in the apartment, she said, he came up to her and says, well, what school do you go to? What time do you go to school? What time do you get off of school? And he was asking all these questions, and she just kept on walking because she knew she just had to keep walking. And she got into the house, and then she said, she walked into the house and she said, that guy is a perpetrator, I know it. And I think she was like in fourth grade, and I didn't know where it came from, but somewhere, somehow, in her instinct, and you talk about gut instinct in your book, she just knew this guy was off, and it was not a good thing. And I remember just prior to that, there had been a report out, and I think we learn as time goes on in many decades, is that you don't put your kid's name anywhere on their belongings where anyone else can see it. There was a big trend where you can put your, you know, you'd get your daughter's name on the back of her backpack, or, you know, she'd have little labels on her shirt, you know, or they'd have their name on their hat or whatever it might be. You know, that was embroidering time or whatever. And I remember she did not have her name on anything visibly. And it was a big deal. But there were other kids who would say, so-and-so would come up and say, hey, Katie, you know, oh, how do you know my name? Well, your mom told me. You know, that type of idea. In other words, it was a gateway. It opened the door. So really, you know, we had noticed no gateway, don't open the door, don't have the name on anything. And second, your gut instinct, pay attention. And really that really helped a lot.
Well, and we can teach our kids to use their gut instinct and to make good decisions. And you do that by helping them, talking them through bad decisions they've made, not by yelling at them and screaming at them and saying, how could you think about that? But after you calm down, walking through it and saying, so tell me, how did you come to that decision? For my son, it was going belly first down his skateboard, or on his belly, head first on his skateboard, down this hill into traffic. And that was, I think I saw my entire life flash before my eyes when that happened. I yanked him out, and it took me about 3 hours to calm down. But after I calmed down, I said, let's talk about this decision and where it came from. And we came to the conclusion that every time he hangs out with certain kids, he says, Mom, I always seem to do things that get me into trouble. I said, well, how do they convince you to do that? Well, I don't know. Sometimes I just go along. And so we talked about it, and he's 9. And, you know, it's not going to stick every single time. But at least now he has one more tool than he had before. And you're right about your daughter and her gut instinct. Some kids have a better spidey sense than others, but we need to encourage our children to use their gut instinct. If our child comes to us and says, that guy just makes me feel creepy, validate them. Even if you think your child's wrong, say, hey, you know what? Okay, what can I do to help? Don't dismiss your child and say, oh, you're just being silly. Because if your child has a feeling, you know, there could be something there. And even though you love and trust the person that your child thinks is creepy, maybe that person may not be everything that they say they are. So we can encourage these traits in our children. And we can encourage them. You know, another thing that I do is, you know, I tell parents, don't force your kids to hug or kiss anyone they don't want to, especially when they're small, because this tells your child that their body is not in their control. And I get parents to say, well, but now my child's going to be disrespectful or my child will turn their back. Well, no, we're not saying that we throw out the baby with the bathwater here. You teach your child respect. You teach your child to look adults in the eyes and to shake their hands if an adult introduces themselves and you're there. You teach them to politely say, no, thank you, and then you tell them, hey, you know what, no one should touch you. If you don't want to be touched, if you don't want to be hugged, you don't have to be hugged. If I don't want to be hugged, I don't have to be hugged. Why should my child be forced to hug? And so that allows them to then, there will be those adults in their lives that say, oh, well, just give me a hug anyway. Oh, come on, come on, come on. And it forces the predator to expose themselves. And it gives your child the ability to say, no, I'm okay. And those boundaries don't get blurred. Your kid defines themselves. They learn proper respect for other individuals, and then they are just so well equipped to go out in the world and be like, hey, I don't have to be suckered in, I don't have to be touched when I don't want to be touched, and it's okay for me to get a weird feeling about someone and tell my mom and not have to interact with that person who makes me feel weird.
And a lot of times, too, when kids are forced to sit on other people's laps, do you know that idea?
That's the same thing with hugging. Never force a child to sit on someone else's lap.
Right, and it could also, too, be just relatives. A lot of times kids could get left off at relatives' homes to be able to babysit them or whatever, you know. So-and-so is going to come and get you, and you wonder why when the kids come home from the relatives all the time, they're throwing up and they're upset and they're beating up on their brother and sister. It's because maybe you haven't been paying attention. Maybe you shouldn't have left them there. Maybe you should be asking the questions.
Well, yeah, and if your child comes home more than once throwing up and angry from being at someone's house, that needs to be addressed immediately. And you need to ask your child open-ended questions about what happened in a very loving way. Hey, what happened? How'd it go? But, you know, you need to – children don't always have the capabilities to come to you and say, hey, a really horrible thing happened. But they may, they'll show you through their attitude. They'll come to you over the course of time. But the most important thing you can do is always make it clear that, A, there are no secrets. And if anyone tells you to keep a secret and that something bad will happen if you tell the secret, then that definitely means you need to come and tell mom, because there's nothing that mom can't handle. And mom will always protect you. And then you arm your child so that when an adult says, this is just our secret, that your kid says, hey, wait a minute. No way. My mom says there are no secrets. And then if an adult asks me to keep a secret, there's something wrong. And, you know, you continually ask your child, you know, hey, how's it going? How are you feeling? Why, you know, I noticed something the other day. Can you tell me about why it happened that way? And the same, you know, when you going back to lap sitting, you know, one of the things that predators love to do is blur sexual boundaries. And children should never be forced to sit on the lap of anyone they don't want to, because that's a great way for a predator to blur a sexual boundary. And I get a lot of parents who are concerned because their children are the kind who love to jump into people's laps and love to hug, you know, hug strangers and do that kind of thing. And they're scared because they're like, my child has no boundaries, and I'm scared that someone will take advantage of that. And that's when you lovingly sit down with your child and say, hey, you know, do you know that not everyone likes to be hugged? Do you know that not everyone likes to have you sit on their lap? And that's true. I mean, most adults are not really fond of having kids crawl into their lap, especially if they don't have kids and this kid is not theirs. And so you tell your child, hey, you know, if you want to hug someone, you always ask permission first. Or you ask if mom first if it's okay for you to go hug that person. Because that's respect for the other person. Because not everyone likes vanilla ice cream. Not everyone likes to be hugged. And now you're teaching your child that other people have body boundaries too. And for the loving child, that's a protective mechanism for the loving child. For the child who may grow into a bully or someone who has no body boundaries and who may, you know, harass other children, that's a great stepping stone into, hey, we keep our hands to ourselves. We never touch other people without their permission. And if this happens, you will be punished.
What about the concept, too, as we've also forgotten to talk about, is when kids are spending the night at other people's homes, and it could be a relative, and the relative might say, oh, they were really scared to sleep by themselves, so they came and slept with me.
You know, sleepovers are always a hotbed of contention, and you need to make it perfectly clear what your rules are when your child goes and spends the night with a family member. You need to talk to your child, you know, hey, I can have a sleepover. You know how we talk about the rules, no secrets. Never be in a room alone with an adult with the door closed. Always make sure you're with your friend. Always also tell your kid, hey, you know what? When you're in the bathroom and the door's shut, no one should ever walk in on you. Mm-hmm. If you're changing your clothes, no one should ever walk in on you. And if anything makes you feel weird or scared, it's totally cool to call mom and I will come and get you. And so, you know, you armor your child that way. And then you also set rules for the, you know, if my son would never crawl into bed with someone else's parents, because that is like this boundary rule that, okay, I can't say he would never, but I'm sure if he did, you know, mm-hmm. something definitely weird is going on. Mm-hmm. And if someone tells you, oh yeah, the kids crawled into bed with me, if that is not someone that you don't totally trust, your child never should go over there again.
Well, I think also, too, the concept that parents more and more are having their kids sleep with them, you know, in their own homes. So when they go to a relative's home, the child just instinctively has that in their head that they're going to go find someone to sleep with because they've always been brought up that way. So I think I've heard that quite often is that, well, he sleeps with me all the time at home, and, you know, do you mind if he sleeps with you? And it's like, really? No.
Yeah, it depends on the situation, you know, and there are families that really embrace co-sleeping, and, right. you know, but you have to really deal with it in a case-by-case basis. I'm not hearing cases coming from things like that right now, and maybe 10 years from now I'll start to hear about them. But really it's about equipping your child about, hey, these are the names of your body parts. No one is to touch your body parts, your labia, your vagina, your breasts, your bare back, your anus, your penis, your testicles. No one is to touch those. And you are not to touch anyone else's. If an adult says, hey, will you touch me? Or a peer says it, no, do not do it. And if it happens, you come to mom. And that's the number, you know, if you do that, then, you know, most, you know, when you look at child sexual abuse that hasn't been reported in the past, most kids, even in my own case, I really didn't know the names of my body parts. And even if I did, I was embarrassed to say them aloud. It's totally different now. If you take away that line and that blurred boundary, that a predator can come in and say, oh, no, it's okay, it's fine, but you make it perfectly clear to your child, no, it's never fine, then your child will be the kid who stands up and walks away. And so, I mean, because now that, you know, it's like, well, like co-sleeping and sleepovers, that's like, you know, we're in the weeds. I mean, that's something that parents really need to address and talk through before a sleepover ever happens.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the hour, and there is one thing that I did want to talk about, and, oh, goodness, it just went out of my mind. Is the concept that if parents have had situations in their past where the lines might have been blurred, and they haven't dealt with that, and then their child is having similar situations, it's really, really important that it might be time for you to, ding the bell and pay attention, but also, too, to not spew your own situation on the child, but to listen to the child first and get yourself help at the same time. In other words, don't disregard the child because of your tapes that are playing in your head or go down any path that you went in your head. You need to treat each situation separately and be able to get the respective care and help for that.
Exactly. I mean, if you are a victim of child sexual abuse and you are struggling and you have a child, you really should get help. It's so easy to get help because when your child hits the age that you were when you were abused, you're going to have a flood of emotions coming forward. Help is available, help is there, and help is easy because your kid only has one chance, and you need to be the healthiest person you can be. And by stuffing your problems inside and thinking that's going to help your kid, it's not going to help your kid. And, I mean, and I take a view of it this way. If you were shot in the chest and before your child was born and you end up with a scar, your child will say, "What's that scar?" And you say, "Well, that was when I was shot in the chest." You wouldn't say, "I'm ashamed," or, "Oh, I can't talk about that." No, you're up front. My son is, you know, I'm not graphic whatsoever, but, you know, I've been doing this work since before he was born. So he knows that mom was hurt when mom was in high school. And he kind of has an understanding about the mechanics of sex because he's just now getting into that. And he asked me about 6 months ago what child sexual abuse was, and I said it's when an adult uses sex to hurt a child. And when an adult takes advantage of a child using sex. And so it's a slow process. And I said, yeah, that's what happened to mom. And if you have more questions, I will explain it more. But that's why I tell you, no one's to touch you. You're not to touch anyone else. That's why you know the name of your body parts, because now it won't happen to you. So, I mean, and my son is not a worldly child. He is not a precocious child. He has age-appropriate knowledge that will help him not only understand why his mom does the work that she does, but also make him a hard target for sex predators.
And also, too, I think the situations of the word abuse have really come full circle because even domestic abuse, emotional abuse, whatever that might be, that you may have experienced it when you were younger, is now coming out and saying it's affecting your life as an adult. So definitely sexual abuse at a younger age can definitely affect your life also as an older adult and how you respond to situations, how you live your life, and how you're just able to have such a full life or not. So really, this is just another time, as we've said on this show many times, is what's really holding you back? What are the secrets that you hold? And is it time to let them go? And I think this is really time to pay attention, share your stories, being able to take care of yourself, your family, and really stepping up. You know, there's a whole lot of victimhood going on these days, and I really say it's really time to step out of that victimhood because really you do have control. You do are able to start saying, I'm not going to let this happen. I am going to take proactive steps. And I really think that's what you've spent the whole time saying, is that take the proactive steps, start talking about it, start using the words, start paying attention. Don't be a parent who just kind of moseys through life and doesn't even notice things going on with their own kids.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Victimhood, I think, is one of the most horrible things that we can do to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a TEDx talk back in May, and I talk about the power of responsibility. And there came that day where I had to say, hey, you know what? I have to take responsibility. I have to take responsibility for the fact that my abuse happened. Doesn't mean I blame myself, but I take responsibility for the fact that it happened. I take responsibility for the fact that the only person who can help me is me. And I'll tell you this, it stinks to be a victim, but it's great to break through victimhood, take responsibility, and make the decision to be happy. And it's within everyone's power and control.
Absolutely. I think sometimes when you say the word, it stinks to be a victim, I think sometimes people have to go through so much that it stinks like bad garbage. And until they're able to say, I can't tolerate this anymore, that's when they'll break through. And until that time, we just have to recognize, support, and be around people. And just don't add fuel to the fire. They will get to it in their own time. And eventually things will crack because you can't hold secrets down forever. Just like, you know, you just can't hold back a wall. It will actually just crush you then. And
exactly.
Then maybe that's the time, you know, maybe that's the time that people just let go. Well, it has been a pleasure to be with you today, Joel. We went through this time so quickly, I just now recognize the time. Could you share with the listeners a little bit about your book and how they could find out more information? That would be great.
Well, my book is The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse. And it is a easy-to-read toolkit that parents can use from the time their child is born until their child is a young adult in college and beyond. It talks about age-specific strategies, how to empower your kids, how to help them make good decisions, how to make them or help them make themselves hard targets for predators, and the signs and symptoms to look for when it comes to not only abuse, but predators and children who may be bullied. I do have another book that might be relevant also to our talk. It's called The Compassionate Response, and it's how to help the adult survivor of child sexual abuse who comes forward to you for the first time. Because it can be shocking and disconcerting when someone says, hey, I was sexually abused as a child. And most of us, you know, most of you are greeted with a doe-eyed stare. And that's a really nice short book that can just help you, give you tools, let you know what to say, help you combat the anger. Because a lot of times when someone comes forward, you get angry because they didn't tell you or because they told you at the wrong time or because you knew the predator. And it helps, you know, the person that is disclosed to work through all their feelings. So both of those are available on Amazon and in other small booksellers. And I do a lot of presentations to parents groups and stuff like that. So I'm always out there talking to people about how to protect their kids against abuse. I also have a website. It's castex.com, C-A-S as in Sam, T as in Tom, E-I-X as in X-ray. It's my last name. And there you can link to all the stuff that I do in my speaking engagements and things like that.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you with us. I think that's a lot of work, and you're really paying it forward and being able to get the information out there, because when something happens to us, it's really about learning from that and able to share with other people. You don't need to sit on all of the experiences that you've had. You could say, hey, this happened, and, you know, this is what I learned from it. Maybe it will help someone else, and that's really what you've done. And I think, again, the book is The Well-Armored Child. It is definitely something that you can give this book or have it on your table or whatever in your home. If you're a grandparent, and you could say, you know, maybe my kids will pick it up and they'll take it home with them, or they'll say, well, what is this all about? And you could just say, hey, it's just a book that I saw and I thought it was kind of interesting to read. You know?
It's great for anyone who works with kids, whether you're a parent, grandparent, educator, daycare center person, sports club leader, doctor, pediatrician. It's just a great tool, and it makes great Christmas gifts.
Yeah, and absolutely, because, you know, you want to say sometimes as grandparents, you say, you know, the world is moving so fast these days, I didn't even know that they even talked about this. You know, hey, there's an opening line. You know, you'll be able to help other people too, because people just don't even realize that sometimes your perpetrator could be the grandparents. Sometimes the perpetrator could be the younger children. You just don't even know these days. But it's really about awareness, and I think that's the most important thing, is The Well-Armored Child. That could be any one of us. It could be adults. It could be children. We could be older people. We all may have seen something that was in this book, but we also may have experienced it, or maybe we would like to say we would like to help others so that this doesn't occur. And that's really what the goal is all about, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you with us, Joel. And, you know, maybe you could come back on another time and share about that other book. That would be great.
Definitely. It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
All right,
if you'd like
you.
To find out more information about The Well-Armored Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Sexual Abuse, the book is out, and the author is Joel Castnicks. Castex, sorry, and she is very much a writer and a blogger, so please do check out her website. The website is on the bottom of today's show page, and click on there and you'll go directly to it. So thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit DrJeanetteGallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.